Hello, I'm Teresa Ayers.
And I'm Janet Gallen, and we are the Love Letter Squad. And we welcome you to another episode, another adventure in the human spirit that is a personal story, a personal life, and the love letter that will come out of this relationship. So I want to go right to our guest, Len Nyper, who is a cabinet maker and has been a cabinet maker in San Francisco for 40 years. He's a ceramicist and a stained glass artist. He reads for the Lighthouse for the Blind. And I'm not going to say any more because I'm just going to go to you, Len, and you can tell some of the other things you do before we start your rest of your story.
Sure. We moved out here. I'll just tell a bit. We had come out here in 1969, the summer of 69. At that time, there were reconditioned taxi cabs that you can, in New York, they would paint them out and make them look like normal cars again. And Marge and I had just gotten back together. We had been apart for about 3 years. We met when we were 22. So we're about 25 now. And we decided to take a trip across the United States. And I had rented an apartment from this fellow who was from San Francisco. He said, why don't you go to San Francisco? And so we decided to do that. And you'd go down to the agency in Lower Manhattan and show your credentials and find out if you were, you know, acceptable to drive these cars and pick an area in the country.
What credentials do you have to show?
Well, they had a good driver's license.
Oh, that's
that
what I meant.
You,
okay.
Know, that you weren't a felon
to
take their car and make off to God knows where.
Oh, so these are rentals. These aren't to buy.
No, what they do is they'd advertise these cars in magazines and people from various parts of the country would buy them and they hopefully marketed them at a reasonable enough price. And so we picked around Portland. I mean, where we found right around Portland. I never knew what they paid for them.
Oh, so you flew to Portland?
No, we got the car in New York.
Oh, and
I
see.
And our task was to deliver it.
Oh.
To the fellow across the, you know, across the.
So that's why they want to know that you're fit to drive it, because it's still going to be their car once you get here.
Until you give it to the person who's bought it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're the delivery.
We are the delivery.
How smart.
Yeah, and I don't know where we heard about that. So, like I say, we went down to the agency. We picked the part of the United States that we wanted to go to. And they gave you a $200 gas allowance. In those days, that got you across the country.
Got you farther than New Jersey.
Well, no, yeah, a little right, exactly. And we went to Seattle or around Puget Sound first, and then came down and dropped off the car. And we're now on the road with our cheap backpacks, which we also bought in Lower Manhattan, not having done this before. We got out to the highway, stuck our thumb out, and we were picked up by four young guys who said, "Where are you going?" Blah blah blah. And they, we told them we were hitching down the coast, making our way to San Francisco. Portland, you know, is a good way up the state in Oregon.
About and 700 miles.
Okay, and they took us. They said, "Well, we've built a lean-to out on the beach, and we'll drop you off at the beach and point out where it is." And so they dropped us off at the beach, and we found the lean-to, and stayed on the beach for about 4 days. And in those days in Oregon, there was nobody around. There was a vegetable stand up on the road. It was Lincoln City was the name of the thing. I looked in a AAA guide a few years ago, and the huge buildings in Lincoln City, but then there was nobody. So we were there. It was August in 1969, and we stayed there, like I say, for 4 days, took mussels off the rocks, watched seals cavort. I sat naked in my body hole. I dug out of sand, and there's nobody to see me. And the fog came in after 4 days, and up we went, and we continued down the coast. I remember spending a night at Newport, which is further down, and waking up with grit in my sand in our teeth. And we made it down to San Francisco, and Marge's sister Mary was living on Grant Avenue in North Beach.
So you had somebody to welcome you.
Yeah, pretty much.
With a shower and a place to sleep.
Yeah, place to sleep, the floor. Yeah. Okay. And we stayed about a week, and we saw the mime troupe. And
was that the start of your making your life here?
We didn't know. We were just, it was a vacation.
Oh, I see.
Marge had, to back up a little, she was one of Twyla Tharp's original dancers.
Oh.
And, you know, like I say, when we got back together, they were doing a dance up at Connecticut College in the summer. And if you look up Twyla's autobiography, Push Comes to Shove, you'll see Len Nyper with picture credits, because I took pictures of that concert, and they're in the book.
Okay, so why don't we back up a little bit, because I know you want to talk about your wife.
Sure.
And this is certainly a good place to start. So how did you meet? Let's just start with that.
Okay.
Could we?
We I didn't
because
bring,
why were you up separate for 3 years?
Yeah, the famous meeting was the I walked down to September, the end of September 1965. I have the dates on the wall of my shop.
What were you doing then in your life?
You know, a little of this, a little of that. I don't think very much. Shortly after we got together, I got a job for an outfit in New Jersey called Two Guys, and it was a big, you know, a chain of department stores. I did merchandising, but I walked down to First Avenue. I had a 5-story walk up on East 76th Street between First and Second. I was 22 years old, and I walked down to First Avenue going to Charlie Bates, which was the tavern that I occasioned, and there were, you know, barricades up on the street, and I asked somebody what's going on. So, oh, well, the Pope's going to speak at Yankee Stadium, Pope Paul. And I said, okay. We stood there for about 15 minutes, and there goes the Pope, about 90 miles an hour. And I said, well, that was a non-event. And I turned around and walked into Charlie Bates, which was empty, save for two young ladies. And right at the corner, we have a corner here in the studio, and I'm pointing to Janet. Like, I walked up to the corner, and Janet was on the other corner, except it was Marge and her roommate, Mary Coombs. And the third roommate, by the way, was Emmy Erta, who Marge had danced with at Connecticut College. And the three of them had an apartment, shared an apartment flat on East 78th Street. And I summoned the courage, and I mean, you know.
Oh, I was going to ask how you started, yes.
I have no idea what my first words were, you know, duh, what, you know, but, you know, so do you like music? I don't know. But
to her, to Marge specifically.
Yeah, to Marge, mm-hmm. to, you know, just hi or hi. And I would love to remember what I said. I can't, but, you know, like all young people, I'm sure there's a certain amount of stammering. And.
But I'm curious about something, just the romantic side of me. Were you kind of generally making conversation with the three of them, or did you take one look at her and know that you wanted to get to know her better?
Well, she was definitely prettier than Mary, so I have to say that she...
So you kind of, she caught your eye in particular.
She caught my eye, okay. Yeah, and, you know, I mean, it was the two of them. And, you know, we just chatted. I remember we walked down to the East River, not that night, but my first date with her, I took her to the Metropolitan Opera because I was an opera guy. She was a dance gal, and I was an opera guy from the time I was 18 and got out of the Air Force.
So you took her out to something lovely on your first date. It wasn't let's meet for coffee.
Well, lovely. It wasn't to meet for coffee. Lovely was in the eye of the beholder. I took her to see and hear Don Carlo stand. And Don Carlo is one of Verdi's great operas, but it's a long, dark, dreary thing. I mean, what you take, if you want, my advice to all you people out in radio land, if you want to take someone on a first date, take them to La Boheme or the Barber of Seville.
But you took her someplace. It was a real date.
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah. And so we went. We went, and it was a little much for Marge, I think. It was a little confining. Standing room at the Metro. This
sure.
is the old Metropolitan Opera, by the way, which was the one that Caruso sang at. That was built in the 19th century. It's before they moved up to Lincoln Center. And I had stood as a standee, I reckon, hundreds of times. I mean, I worked in the neighborhood, and if there was not, even when I lived at home with my parents in Brooklyn, I would get online if there wasn't, the line wasn't too long. And that was my education, by the way.
How nice.
About going to opera, getting into arts, you know, just, that mm-hmm. was, I did not go to college, or just a little tiny bit, and going into opera was my thing. So we went to the opera, and without going, we decided to spend a lot of time together that weekend. And Saturday morning, I remember she looked at me and said to me, I always remember, she said, I think I'll hang around for a while.
Oh.
She did. Said, that's what she said.
That was good news to you.
You know, yeah, she, Marge was, and remains a very special person. I want to say Teresa, who's sitting here, knows her, has met her. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure people feel that way, you know, husbands about wives, wives about husbands. But for me, she is. She was a extremely enthusiastic, optimistic, positive gal. I'll just say she's Norwegian and Scots-Irish. I don't know what that has to do with it, but nevertheless, she brings that culture, and she right now she there's Daughters of Norway, which she's joined. That's the, you know, she goes to that group. And at any rate, the next day she took me to up to the Cloisters, which is, if you're familiar, Washington Heights, I think. And I had never, I knew very, very little about art in general. And I remember her sister, Timmy, visited us, and in my apartment that I had, there was a little Michelangelo print hanging on the wall. And Timmy started to ask me something, and Marge went, no, he doesn't know anything about that. So, you know, I was the music guy, and that became a very, I would say,
so when did this turn into something exclusive and just the two of you in series?
Immediately.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
that's
we're
nice.
Very, I will say now, I've got a picture of these two otters on my wall behind my desk, and when people come and sit at my, you know, in my little office space, I'll point and say, "There's Marge and I."
How nice.
Still remain playful and very affectionate, and it was that way from the beginning. You know, I would make up names about her, silly nicknames, and you know, I don't think
this is
anybody
just all
ever
delicious
did
information
before.
For a love letter. Have you written her love letters before?
I don't. I've written things, short things, and that I've stuck on my wall, but I've never, I don't think I have. She wrote me, and I don't think, we weren't apart long enough. And in the modern world, I mean, usually it was telephone. If we were apart,
right.
It was telephone. But she has written things and written a couple of poems, which we framed in it
for
on
you.
My desk. To me, about us.
Yeah, so nice.
Yeah, I mean, for our 30th anniversary.
But that's interesting what you say about the telephone, because, of course, and today it's email and texting and...
Telephone.
Telephone and more telephone.
Yeah.
But there's something different about a letter. Because,
absolutely.
And so telephone and email are for communication of a necessary kind. And wonderful, by the way, unless the telephone rings while you're sleeping or doing one of another 150 things you don't want to be bothered with. But, I mean, you know, have interrupted. But a letter, in addition to all this, is a separate gift.
Yeah, I think, I mean, what comes to mind is that, you know, you have you're closeted with yourself, and whatever, you have the full experience of your own self, and as much as you want to do, plus the fact that it's not immediate.
Exactly.
So you can ponder it, and you could, it's almost like
let him do this.
Oh, I was going to say that I draw now, and it's kind of like a drawing. A letter is like a verbal drawing in my mind. It's like you can refine it. You know, it comes from your heart, or it comes from your
You
can
write our book for it.
I'm laughing because we just love it when somebody comes here and then they take over and say all the points that we want to make.
Well,
and that's so nice when people realize these things out loud.
Yeah.
We do love that. So that's right. Everything you said.
In fact, my son, I want to say at this time that if I may, my younger son just sent me an email, and we were talking about some of the conflicts or hardships raising a young family, and we did have those, and some of those were, you know, unfortunate. And I told my younger son that, and he wrote me this. Lauren's always been he's the letter writer in the family, by the way. Nice. You would not believe, he's 34 now, for holidays, for birthday, for Christmases or for birthdays, a very eloquent guy. And he just wrote me this letter expressing that, you know, his fortunate, how fortunate he feels and understands some of my plight as a young father.
Oh, we can retire. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Exactly.
Saying that, you know, what he told me, more to the point, he said, I have what you didn't have, which was loving parents to talk to you.
And we talk about this, you know, we have a Dear Mother seminar that we... audio seminar. And one of the things we talk about, and good for him, is what does a parent want to hear in a love letter?
Yeah.
Do you need another tie? No, I would guess not. But you do need that, right?
Yeah, it really meant a lot to me.
Yeah,
in fact,
of course.
I'll be framing that and sticking that up. It's,
perfect.
I really appreciate
it. Yes, that's the next thing we say.
Those kinds of letters are not thrown away.
And you know something? Your great-grandchildren will see that someday.
Oh, I'm a saver, but I do.
But they'll know something important about you.
Yeah.
And who you are, because it'll be there on paper forever. Because... Yeah. The other technology may not last. I mean, we look back, and you already can't play the beta things, the first things.
The floppy disks that were 3.5
floppy disks, never mind. So, although everything is good to do for communication, those letters are going to last longer than anything else.
Well, let's get to that gift for Marge. But first, just remind our listeners that this is Love Letters Live. We're here here every week at this time and hope you'll join us for another great guest with a story to tell and a love letter to write.
This is going to be just delicious. So I'm going to ask, because I always do, who gets your love letter today?
I really want to send it to, because of where we are right now, to the three of them, really.
Oh,
to
okay.
To Marge and my children.
All right.
I just feel that way. I mean, Marge knows. I just want to say, for me, a love letter is part of, it's a continuity.
Absolutely.
In my life. And, I think, that's how I feel.
Okay,
yeah.
So you want to do one letter for three rather than three letters.
Oh, no, it would be three letters.
Oh, good. Oh,
yeah,
good.
Yeah, it would be three letters.
Okay, so let's start with Marge. You call her Marge?
Actually, I call her Mongo most of the time.
There you go. I love pet
names. But if I wrote a letter, I wouldn't write Dear Mongo.
No?
I'd write, no. No,
what?
I just, no. I'd write
What
Marge.
Are the things, by the way, since you haven't written a love letter before, would it be worth it to say why you're writing it now? Or does that not need to be said?
It doesn't need to be
okay.
said.
Okay. So what are the three things, for example, that you most want her to know about what and why you love her?
What are the first three things? the contact that she gives me in life. Shall I say anything at all about my previous family?
You say anything at all that you want
to
say?
Yeah, I mean, my mother was unfortunately a non-demonstrative gal, and she had her life situation, which after many years of counseling, I understand deeply, and we're fine now. She's 95, living in Florida, and when you talk to her, you know, her faculties are still very there. She's a bright person,
mm-hmm.
With a very hard upbringing. And
so you're not from a physically...
My father was more that way.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we would do wrestling, we would play running bases on the beach, and my dad was. But, you know, I think my parents were challenged.
Mm-hmm.
I know they were, and my mom has said that she felt she was a child bringing up children.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad she volunteered that. So we've been through all that, but what Marge has, I mean, Marge is really the sunshine. Oh, actually, I'll tell you, for those people who like opera,
mm-hmm.
and if they remember Das Rheingold, it's the goddess Freya, F-R-I-A, when the giants come and they take Freya away, and all of a sudden the stage turns dark. And that's how it would be if Marge wouldn't. I mean, Marge would. It's the brightness. It's the optimism. It's the natural exuberance. And plus, she jumps on me all the time. And fortunately, my body is still. You know, I still can take that. And she says the same about me. When I went on my first trip to England by myself in 1991, I was surprised. She said that. She said when you were out of the house, all of a sudden there was
okay.
There
so
was
that,
a
that's a really nice thing to talk about because
yeah.
in a love letter, which is always about the other guy.
That's right.
But in something like this, you can talk about yourself if it's how you feel in light of the other person, and it's still a really good part of a love letter, I think. So if you say something, if you talk about that. And how she makes you feel because
sure.
she feels the same, it's really a beautiful thing. So you want to include that, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. That it is reciprocal. And in any relationship, it always takes two. And, you know, it's not always even, and sometimes things come up. And I do want to say about relationships, again, if I may,
mm-hmm.
that you know, the passion and whatever you have, to whatever degree you have that, that's fine. But an understanding of cooperation, to have that together, to in a bigger picture sense, that it's not just about you, that it's about your two people or a family. And, those are things that get honed over the years. That's
mm-hmm.
why I want to write it to everybody when I write the letter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What are the things about her qualities that you love most? And by the way,
qualities? That can be... Start with her blue eyes.
Okay, I was going to say that can be physical and that can be spiritual, emotional. But physical is important. You know why?
Yeah.
Because what woman doesn't want to know that you noticed? Okay.
I call her, you know, my Marge. I'm about 5'8", Marge is almost my size. So I call her my, you gigantic beauty, and I call her usually that, you know, only about 5 or 6 times a day, and her response usually, oh, thank you, oh, thank you. We're very physical. Or sometimes she'll be cooking out in the kitchen, and I'm lying on the couch, and she'll come into the couch and say, I missed you. You know, she's only down the. And so, you know, it's that kind of, it's stuff like that. Yeah.
That's wonderful.
I think also that our culture is so different that we both feed each other with you know, I'm in a way more cerebral.
Mm-hmm.
And so she really appreciates when things come up that need to be thought about, and also languaged. I think I've over the years developed a good affinity for being able to express myself in language, you know, whether it's, you know, day-to-day stuff or emotional things. And
so you're saying that comes more naturally to you?
It does. And so just as she's given me a lot of optimism and support and positive stuff like that, I give her family's ethos would have been, oh, we're not going to talk about it. We'll forget about it. And I developed that, and so she's very appreciative of that. So we go back and forth. I don't think there's anything that we don't talk about. I mean, everybody's got their private, you know, their
private stuff.
But I mean, to the degree that there's something that needs to be discussed about the kids, about money, about whatever it is, you know, about her ladies at the art class and something that happened, she gave me for Valentine's Day a card that it was a very lovely card, but it was your friend, your love and your friend. And as my younger son signed that email that I alluded to, your son and your friend. And I think there's a difference between a lover and a friend.
And what a compliment.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. I mean, a friend is, you know, I mean...
Well, in a marriage, one without the other is a little,
lacking,
you think.
Yeah, it's.
So, okay, so you have a lot to say to her. And what stationery would you use?
What stationery would I use?
Mm-hmm. You're laughing?
Smiling.
Yeah.
Can't see this out there in
that's
radio
right,
land,
that's
but
what
I'm
saying,
smiling.
Yes.
She caught me smiling. I remember I do think about things, which is not good for long pauses on radio.
That's okay. You can think out loud.
Well, I was just thinking of some of the things my father used to give my mother. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the old days, I remember the Valentine's Day things, that the boxes of chocolate shaped in a heart, and they used to have these satin with cloth on them, or they were scented. And so if I were giving her something, if I went to look for it, I'd look for something like that, something special. I want to say that usually we communicate so lovingly most of the time that, you know, I hadn't thought about what,
of course.
If I were looking for something, it would
be a nice time to think about it, because this love letter is a gift, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it needs a gift wrap, right? So will you mail it, or will you leave it for her to find it, or what do you think you tend to do?
Yeah, I'd leave it for her to find. For Christmas, was that the last holiday we had? Yeah.
I don't remember. Yeah.
The way I left her, I gave her a heart.
Valentine's Day.
No, it wasn't for Valentine's Day. It was for Christmas. I gave her a little heart. It was gold with a couple of diamonds.
Oh, a jewelry heart.
And
nice.
I left it in the toaster oven.
Uh-huh. Risky.
That's where she goes for her toast every morning.
Yes.
And she, what is this?
Oh.
So, yeah. In other
it was
words,
in a box. So she
it was in a
see,
box.
Oh,
oh
just,
yeah, it was
uh-huh.
in a box. She had to unwrap it.
Fortunately, she didn't turn on the oven first.
Right. Toast, she knows it's already. I get up first, and I do the toast. She does dinner, I do breakfast. And I'd find a way to make it unique and hide it so that she would be delighted with.
Okay.
I want to say that, Marge, I want to throw in that I've given her... like for Christmas, I've given big gift baskets, and Marge is the kind of person who will walk in and just light up and go, oh, what fun.
Okay.
It's something that I would never say, and she just, those things like that come very naturally.
She loves everything that's in the basket, right? It's all perfect.
Yeah, she pretty much, yes, yeah. I mean, these are big baskets, so by the time she's weighted down through the grapefruits, you know, some of her enthusiasm may clear.
Okay, so I have another question. When she finds this, wherever you leave it,
yeah,
do you have a sense of that you should be out of the room when she reads it?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
For the same reasons that somebody can, can some gifts you give, you want to be there. I think that you want to take it in. I think when somebody's there, you feel that part, you can't react fully.
Right.
You kind of, you have to worry about how the other person is. So, sure, I think a gift that's important, many gifts.
Perfect what you say. That's what we say every week. That's exactly what we think.
Yeah.
Because it's private.
Yeah.
Reading a love letter is private, and you want to see what you see in it without having to make a response.
Well, that's the thing. I do want to say something. When we were apart, if I may,
please.
I was living. I had when we parted. And you asked me. She went back to dance. She wanted to dance. I wanted to just hang out with her. So we went our separate ways for a while. And when she left, that was a huge event in my life. And I said, no, what I'm doing is not good enough. So those became my hangout years. And I was a ski bum up in Vermont. I went to the St. Thomas. I did stonemasonry, which was the hardest work of my life in the summer of the Caribbean. And Marge and I can't remember how we got back together, but we did. And I took her to see Yellow. I was up for a little while, and we went to see Yellow Submarine together. And I must have told her where I was because I got wound up getting a letter from her in St. Thomas. And before, it was just like we weren't seeing each other anymore, and we were just, we knew each other from a passionate, 9-10 months together until we parted. And in the letter that I got, which was written on green paper with purple magic marker, and God, I wish I saved the letter, I read between the lines.
There you go.
It's kind of like in art. You sometimes see the negative spaces. I read the words, but between the lines, you could feel that she really missed me.
Oh, good.
And it was enough for me to say, I've got it to myself. I've got it. There was not picking up a phone and saying, what's going on? It was just what I said to myself is, I've got to get back to New York and reconnect with this gal. And that's what happened.
And then it was forever.
And then it was forever, yeah. Then we got back together. And there were little things like, oh, I think you ought to get your own place, or I want your own room, or this, things about, because I think she sensed that, boy, if I get together with this guy, given our past, how passionate and close we were when we had been together, it's going to be really there. And so, she had to see that. Mm-hmm. But she had danced hard. I think she was glad to give up the dancing. She said she was. After a while, the romance of any being art and rehearsing all the time, it's not romantic. It's a grind.
Hard
it's
work.
A lot of work.
Yeah.
It's very hard work. And like I say, and she also came from her family loved children. And that's kind of an issue about how they react to them. Sometimes I wish they were a little, they love children in a young way sometimes. And sometimes things don't get transmitted that should be. And that was one of our struggles raising a family.
Okay, so you have two sons?
Two sons.
Okay, and how old are they now?
39. Leaf will be 39 in April, and Lauren's turned 34.
Okay, so you want to write to your two sons.
Uh-huh.
And the same thing. And I think it's nice separately. And even though Teresa and I talk about this, sometimes Teresa had mentioned, you can use the same core for the things you want to say to each, to both, and then tailor it to fit each letter to fit what's relevant to just
sure,
each separately.
Sure, absolutely. Three different individuals.
Yes. Yeah, so there'll be three envelopes, and I guess these you'll mail.
Yeah.
Because they don't live with you, right?
No, they don't live. Right. They both live in New York.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So just quickly, what are you want to let them know? What, how lucky you are that they are your sons?
How lucky I am.
Mm-hmm.
I would find different words.
Yes,
they would be heartfelt. We're a very deep family, if I may say. I mean, we have experience in psychological and philosophical issues. The way we talk to each other sometimes are deep and involved. And I would put things of that nature.
That's
talk
what
about,
I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in other words, what they are to you, each one of them.
Sure, absolutely.
Okay.
I think what Janet is saying is that you should know when you start a letter, you should know what your goal is in writing
that's true.
That letter.
Yes.
And what the other person wants to hear.
Yeah.
Needs to hear.
Okay.
So it's from father to sons, just to say that.
For me, if I were writing it, I understand that you would have, yes, you want to make a contact of some kind, but as I write, I don't know. So I would trust my heart and my soul to see what, you
but
know.
But it is a simple expression of love to your sons.
Sure, absolutely.
That's
well, I wouldn't
I'm
be
that's
writing.
The goal.
Yes,
right. That's
okay.
The goal. Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just so people hear that.
Yes.
It's nice to,
yes.
Okay. Yeah. And you'll know what to say.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Lynn, for coming. And if I can just put in a plug for his cabinet making, I must say it is quite excellent. Lynn did quite a bit of work for us almost 20 years ago, and we're still using
still
the cabinets every day.
Good.
And enjoying them.
Do you have a website you like people to look at?
I don't have a website, but I can be Googled at Lynn Niper Cabinet Maker.
Oh, I know. I found you that way. Okay.
Can you?
Yes, sir.
Oh. Okay.
Okay.
I have 12 pages for some strange reason.
Okay. Google Lynn Niper if you're interested in doing that. L-E-N, last name, K-N-Y-P-E-R, Cabinet Maker. Thank you. It's nice to hear from a man who loves his wife.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you guys.
Thank you.
So just time to say thank you for joining us. Love Letters Live, please be with us every week at this time. And remember, if you think you need a special occasion to write a love letter, Janet?
Writing a love letter is a special occasion. And if you'd like to take a look at our website at lovelettersquad.com, www.loveletterSquad.com. We'd like to know you were there.
Yeah, there's lots more information.
So until we meet again.
With love from Teresa.
And Janet, the Love Letter Squad.
Bye-bye.
See you later.